We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of Arizona Wildcats football. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment, or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, they have the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glenn and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Michael Lev. We just left Kevin Sumlin's press conference.
We did.
It's been a long time, Michael Lev, since we had a chance to talk to Kevin Sumlin. The Arizona coming off a bye week. They have UCLA this week. And Kevin Sumlin utilized the bye week to fly around in his helicopter doing some cruton in Phoenix. He went up to Higley Millennium. There's a recruit from Millennium that has an offer from
Reagan
Arizona.
Terry, defensive end, right?
No, he's with Florence.
Oh, am I getting
that was a pit
am
stop.
I getting my am I getting recruits. My recruits crossed here?
Yes. I mean, but
this is not surprising, given that I can't get any of the names of the high school straight.
Yeah,
that I would get the recruits. But go ahead, you're more the expert in this.
Well, I think the main recruit or the highlight recruit from that game was Jason Harris.
Jason Harris, of course,
brother Jalen Harris, son of Sean Harris, former Arizona All Pac-10 linebacker, 6'7", 6'8", long guy. I mean, he's like 2-3 inches taller than his older brother here.
Yeah,
imagine what he's going to do if he puts on some weight and comes to Arizona. But Kevin Sumlin also made a pit stop to Florence, which he saw Reagan Terry,
yep,
another defensive end. So Kevin Sumlin flying around in his helicopter this weekend.
And he said he was
swag-copter.
He was back in Houston as well this weekend, and sounded like he was doing some recruiting there as well. I'm sure he was visiting with family and stuff too. But, you know, the way it was portrayed on Friday, the swag copter, and, you know, he pulls up in his Porsche and walks over to the swag copter and
flash,
gets out and puts his jacket on and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think it's just like a cool PR stunt, basically. I mean, there is a practical use for it, of course. I mean, you can avoid traffic, which if you've ever been tried to drive around Phoenix that time in the evening on a Friday, you know, it's not fun. You know, it's kind of a mini LA in that regard. But I think really more it's like, hey, you know what? I'm back in the swag copter. Arizona's willing to invest some money and resources into recruiting. You know, look, we're serious about this. That's the message that really gets sent to me when he does that.
Well, and it's a statement, just like you said, with, you know, Jason Harris. I would like to think he wouldn't have to break out the helicopter to recruit a guy like Jason Harris, you know, considering his ties here at Arizona, but when you're a four-star recruit like Jason Harris and you're getting recruited by Texas A&M, Oregon, Alabama,
yeah,
you know, some of the best programs in the country, sometimes you need to make that little extra effort to show, hey, we're making you a priority for this recruiting class. And the same goes for Reagan Terry, because he's a three-star guy, but he is – we saw him over the summer. I mean, he's a big guy that can contribute right away. And Reagan Terry, he's got family ties to Boston College, I believe. So Arizona, they're battling Boston College right now to get Reagan Terry. I think bringing a helicopter to his game really shows that they really want him.
Well, number one, he said it from the beginning, and he said it again today. Recruiting within the state of Arizona is a huge priority. Number two, you can never have enough pass rushers, right? Like, bring in as many, you know, good, impressive-looking defensive ends as you can and hope that, you know, some of them work out. Getting to the quarterback, it's always going to be a priority. It's a way to disrupt any given offense that you might face. So, hey, if they can somehow land both of those guys and the helicopter had a little bit to do with it, then, hey, that's a big win.
Mm-hmm. So outside of the helicopter, there were more things discussed in Kevin Sumlin's press conference, more so UCLA.
Yeah.
Looking ahead to this big game, and it's a big game because – in the first half against Washington State when the Bruins played them last week, we all thought, oh, man, typical UCLA getting blown out by yet another Pac-12 opponent. Arizona, how much are they going to beat UCLA in Tucson? Then in the second half, trailing by 32 points, UCLA rallies back, and they win the game in Pullman. And now we have ourselves a game this Saturday in Tucson.
We do. And I think it's really important to remember what led to that crazy comeback. Washington State turned the ball over 6 times. Washington State allowed 2 special teams touchdowns. The comeback doesn't happen if those things don't happen. So that would be the biggest lesson to me out of that game is, like, sure, you know, UCLA, obviously they showed signs of life. There's a lot of talent on that roster. There's a lot of speed and explosiveness. But Washington State let them back in the game through their own errors and mistakes. And last year's game at UCLA, I mean, Rhett Rodriguez threw an interception in the red zone. J.J. Taylor fumbled inside the 5-yard line on what would have been like a 60-yard touchdown. You know, those are probably the biggest reasons that they ended up losing that ball game last year. You know, I asked Coach Sumlin if, you know, if it was maybe a good thing for his team that UCLA came back because now it has everyone's attention. And he said that it's UCLA. They had our attention already. I believe him when he says that, but I also think there's a human nature element to this where if they were 0-4 and got completely blown out at Washington State, it's entirely possible that Arizona would have come into this game feeling overconfident, might not have paid all the attention to all the details that they needed to, and might have been a little sloppy. And you can see what happens when you're a little sloppy against a team with a lot of talent and a really good coach.
What do you take away from the UCLA second half? You mentioned all the things and all the components and how they were able to rally back, but Michael Lev, I'll tell you this. I was really certain that UCLA was going to lose late in the game when Chip Kelly decided to go for it on fourth down rather than was a 36-yard field goal.
Yeah.
It was a chip shot for any, you know, Division I kicker. They go for it. They don't get it. And I actually shut off the TV, Lev, because I had to go grocery shopping. The grocery store ended or it closed at midnight, and it was like 11:15, 11:20, so I had to hurry up and get over to the grocery store. Thought, oh, man, there's no way. After that decision, they don't come back. And I get to the grocery store and find out they end up winning.
First of all, this is some insight into the bachelor life here.
Going grocery
shopping at like 11:30 p.m. on a Saturday. It's not how things work over at the Lev household, generally speaking. But, you know, we all thought coming into the season that, you know, UCLA is going to be one of the most improved teams in the conference. Chip Kelly's second year. I mean, it's Chip Kelly. He was incredibly successful at Oregon. You know, revolutionized the sport, one could argue. And there was a lot of discussion about that today during the press conference. And then they got off to a terrible start. Now, granted, they had a tough schedule. Cincinnati on the road, who I had as a preseason top 25 team, and I still think talent-wise that they belong in that discussion. And they had Oklahoma in week 3. Probably expect them to beat San Diego State at home in week 2, and it was a competitive game, so on and so forth. But one of the toughest schedules in the country. Interesting to hear, you know, Kevin Sumlin today talking about how they've changed things schematically. They were a lot of, like, double tight end, shifting type alignments early in the season, and they were more of a spread style this past week against Washington State, which might just be a better fit for Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who put up over 500 yards of total offense in
game.
You know, he's kind of spearheaded the comeback. The guy that I would be worried about if I was Arizona is this kid, Demetric Felton, who they call him I don't know what he is, a running back, a wide receiver. He's kind of a hybrid. They line him up in the backfield sometimes. The big, you know, passing play to him was a play where he came and ran kind of an angle route. That's a tough guy to cover.
If you got him on your fantasy team, he's a flex guy.
Right? Yeah, he's a flex guy. So extremely fast and explosive. And that's going to be a big challenge for this kind of newish-looking linebacking core of Arizona. We assume that we're going to see 3 guys on the field again most of the time. They really liked how that worked out against Texas Tech, having Schuler, Fields, and Pandy on the field. Any of those guys can cover. I don't know if they can cover someone like Demetric Felton, though, because he looks like one of the fastest players in the league.
Mm. Now that we're at this point in the season, though, Arizona's 2-1. Now they're entering their fourth game of the season. This is a very important game, Lev, because this is the cutoff point for a lot of true freshmen. I mean, they can play this game against UCLA and still redshirt and still have the opportunity to redshirt if they want to save another year of eligibility. And then there's the news that came out today with Houston quarterback De'Aaron King, who played four games and looked impressive in all those games but decided to sit out. He wasn't benched. He wasn't hurt. He decided to sit out. Kevin Sumlin said today that this was one of the best rule changes in college football. But then you have the issue going on with De'Aaron King. Yeah. Lev, how do you assess, you know, kind of the back and forth on this redshirt rule?
I think that it's more good than bad, for sure, that the positives outweigh the negatives if you view what De'Aaron King is doing as a negative or what Kelly Bryant did at Clemson last year as a negative. You know, basically, if you haven't redshirted and you're a senior and you're a quarterback and you lose your job or you don't like the coach or there's been a change, I mean, before you get to that fifth game, you could decide to basically walk away and redshirt and play somewhere else next year, you know, as a grad transfer. And, of course, as soon as the news about De'Aaron King came out, everyone on Twitter is saying, oh, you know, here's the Oklahoma quarterback in 2020 and he's going to win the Heisman and all that stuff. So who knows? We'll see. But as far as Arizona goes, I think that they are, if they feel like guys are helping them win this year, they're going to keep playing them. Like, I don't see them sitting Jordan Morgan, even though you'd like to redshirt an offensive lineman if you can. I mean, they have used him on special teams. They have used him a couple times. They used him as an extra tight end, you know, as a blocker. I think he plays on the kickoff return team as a blocker. Mm-hmm. So someone like him, if they're contributing, I think they're going to continue to play.
But how much is Jordan Morgan really contributing? I think he's going to be a great player here.
They've got 72 players on the roster. It might be 72 scholarship players on the roster. It might be 71. I don't know if Maurice Gaines is included in that. And we found out last week that he's no longer in the team. I also don't know if Samari Springs is on scholarship or not. So it's 71 or 72, somewhere in that range. And then you look at who – some of those guys are not contributing. You know, some veteran guys, like, you know, not to pick on anyone, but just for example, Jalen Cochran, Reedy Short, Malik Hausman. I mean, they're – you know, maybe a couple of those guys are doing some stuff on special teams, but they're not regulars in the rotation. So that number starts to shrink, and you want to win this year.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you sacrifice wins this year for the future unless you get to a point in the season where they're eliminated from bowl contention or something of that nature. So there are some other guys, though, like, for example, Jalen Johnson. I think he's appeared in maybe one game so far. The wide receiver is a little bit banged up coming out of training camp. That's one where I think they're going to monitor, like, exactly how many games he's played. Michael Wiley's an interesting case. Really prominent role in that first game. Not so much since then. And now you've got Bam. You've got Brightwell. You know, JJ, I guess he was a little banged up the last game and probably got most of last week off, but we assume he's going to still be in the mix. You still have Tilford. What do you do with a Wiley? You know, do you decide, hey, you know what, we're going to put you on the shelf here in case we need you?
Is two games that he played? Because he didn't play in the game against Texas Tech, I don't believe.
Or maybe he came in late in the second half. So I think he might be at three. So
this is tough. No, so do you just kind of keep him in the back pocket?
I don't know.
Wait till later in the Pac-12 season?
Well, what someone said, for those who, you know, we were there. Obviously, our listeners weren't, you know, listening into the whole press conference. But he said they spent part of last week examining all of those cases, all those situations, trying to figure out, you know, which guys belonged in one category and which ones belonged in another. And maybe even there's a third category where they don't know. But like Keon Bars, I think they're going to keep playing him.
Yeah.
Because they need big, strong defensive linemen, and he's proving his worth so far as someone who's, you know, able to kind of hold his own there in the middle of the defense.
So who would you put in that category of guys that are not going to utilize the redshirt rule this year? Guys that are for sure going to play over four games this season. I can automatically assume Christian Roland Wallace.
For sure. Bobby Wolf, I think, is another one. Yeah.
Keon Bars?
I would say Keon Bars at this point is trending in that direction.
And then Who else outside of those guys?
Well, again, I'm going to say Jordan Morgan. Like, they just like him too much. And I think that he's got some versatility, you know, because he can, like I said, he can be an extra tight end. He can be a sixth offensive lineman. He can, you know, he can fill in at left tackle. He can play on special teams. He's been on the field goal and extra mm-hmm. point teams. Darian Clark.
That's another interesting case.
That's an interesting case because he's mostly played on special teams. So, yeah, I don't know about that one. Trey Adams is already redshirted. He's in his second year. So there aren't that. Jackson Turner's another one who's played a little bit, and I think he's a special teams guy. So we'll have to make that determination. I thought it was interesting what he said about, you know, having those freshmen play on special teams allows them to not use Colin Schooler, Tony Fields, and Anthony Pandy on all of those special teams units. And given the way that they deployed their defense against Texas Tech, where a lot of guys played a lot of snaps, it makes sense to give them a break. Here's an interesting one for you, Justin. Grant Gunnell. Remember.
One game.
Remember, at the very, very end of that Texas Tech game, Khalil kind of got, like, tackled weird on that one run on the 99-yard drive, and he was kind of gimpy a little bit. You know, I don't know. He did. When I asked him about Khalil during the press conference today, whether he was, you know, how motivated he was, he kind of dodged the question a little bit and was kind of like, I just got back in town. I don't know. Everybody's motivated for UCLA. Something to keep an eye on.
Okay.
For sure. And Grant Gunnell has appeared in one game. He's up to number 2 on the depth chart. That is official now. It's been changed. They haven't changed a lot of stuff on the depth chart, but they did change that. You know, just something to monitor this week.
You asked Kevin Sumlin the very last question at the press conference, what concerns you about your team coming into Pac-12 play? And he says everything. Like, coach speak.
Yeah.
If you were to look at this Arizona team and really highlight something that they need to work on or an area that could really be their crutch this season, what are you highlighting?
Yeah. Well, let's set aside for a minute just the defense in general. They obviously played a great game against Texas Tech. And the question is that repeatable? You know, is this the defense we're going to see moving forward? I don't know the answer to that. But digging down and getting a little more specific about like one's position or one element of the game, I would say punting.
Yeah.
And I know that people, it's not like a sexy radio topic or like thing that's going to like draw in a lot of listeners to our podcast or whatever. But hardcore football fans know how important it is to have reliable punting, to be able to flip the field, get good hang time, all of those things. I think there was, a 10-yard difference between Texas Tech's punting in that last game and Arizona's, and that was reflected in the average starting field position. It was about 10 yards, maybe 11.
And it's worse that the Texas Tech punter is from Arizona,
the one that got away. And, as Kevin Sumlin noted, number 1 in the nation in punt return average, UCLA Bruins.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a couple ways you can go about this. One, you can just never punt. You can be just amazingly good on offense and just score every time. It's not a problem.
That's how I play Madden.
Or you can keep the competition going between Kyle Ostendorp, the freshman, and Matt Aragon, the senior, and maybe Cameron Weinberg, the other freshman, gets into the mix on this. But that area worries me because you're not going to score every single time against every opponent that you face. It is important to flip the field. And you want to get more than like 35 net yards out of a punt. Those yards all add up over the course of a game and they make a difference.
I like I think you're spot on with the special teams, especially punting. I think that's probably their biggest area of concern. But you look at, you know, offense and defense, I don't think there's too much concern offensively for Arizona. But if you were to look at something, and again, I'm splitting hairs here, maybe consistency from the wide receiver group? Because if you were to think about maybe the top 3 guys that Arizona can go to in the passing game, got 3 guys that Khalil Tate can look at and say, I'm going to you when it's crunch time. Tavion Cunningham, I think, is arguably the top guy, right?
Maybe.
And who else? Drew Dixon's kind of been
Stanley
up and down.
Stanley Berryhill.
Stanley Berryhill.
Cedric Peterson.
Well, Cedric Peterson, you asked Kevin Sullen today about his production.
And he said he's been solid, which he has been, and he made a huge catch at the end of the Texas Tech game, which was his only reception of the game. It was the last pass thrown by Arizona in the game, 47-yarder, down to about the 5, and they punched it in soon after. I think that position is still kind of sorting itself out, and I really don't know how to read into the fact that they don't have a go-to guy or even a couple go-to guys. It's kind of, I feel like it's going to be different throughout the season, but it's going to come from the group of, in all likelihood, Cedric Peterson, Stanley Berryhill,
Joyner,
Tavian Cunningham, Jamari Joyner, Brian Castile. Those are probably your top five. I hope I'm not forgetting somebody.
Did you say Drew Dixon?
Drew Dixon, maybe he's in that group too.
Yeah.
Although he seemed to have a better connection with Grant Gunnell, frankly, than he did with Khalil for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe it's just reps in practice or something of that nature. I'd be interested to see, too, if Booby Curry works his way into this mix. We thought he was going to play against Tech, and they ended up holding him out. He's another freshman to monitor in terms of, is he going to play? How much is he going to play? How much of an impact is he going to have? Someone who came here in spring, so he had, you know, that advantage and looked really good until he got banged up about midway through training camp, which also happened to Jalen Johnson, which also happened to Jaden Mitchell. Those are your three, those are your three wide receivers in the class, and all of them got banged up during camp.
So we'll talk more Arizona, UCLA as the Wildcats get ready to take on the Bruins this Saturday. Lev, we touched on UCLA and Wazoo. What was some other interesting things that you took out of the Pac-12 this weekend?
It was a very interesting weekend. I mean, let's start Friday night. USC beats
Utah.
You know, what, number 10 Utah. It's not that surprising of a result. Somewhat surprising given that USC lost their quarterback again, like on the first, what was it, the first series or second series of the game. Matt Fink comes off the bench and he's just kind of bombing away, taking advantage of those great wide receivers. Utah, again, not surprising that they lost, but still kind of a disappointing performance from them. They sort of looked like the Utah teams that we've seen the last few years. Like, when they really need to make a play on offense, it's not happening.
Can't do it.
It's not happening. And I don't know if that's because Tyler Huntley is limited to some degree, if that's the coaching. They don't have weapons. I don't know what it is. Now, they did lose Zach Moss, their star running back, early in that game. And I think we mentioned on an earlier podcast that, like, the key for Utah is keeping Huntley and Moss healthy. And they lost one of them, and it really did seem to hurt them. They did move the ball up and down the field. I think they're going to be okay. But as far as the big picture goes, it hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts. I feel like Oregon is kind of gone into the position. Well, Cal is still undefeated.
Oh, true.
Right? So, but Oregon, to me, though, if their only loss all season is in a neutral site against the top 10 Auburn team, you know, that puts them in good position. But, so that started the
sure.
week. And then things got even more interesting Saturday morning, didn't they?
I, for one, I want to talk about – I just want to give a shout-out to my guy Mel Tucker at Colorado.
Yeah, okay.
Beat ASU on the road. But that's not why I'm giving him a shout-out.
Well, what about me? Can you shout-out me for picking – Colorado to win that game.
Big shout out to Michael
up.
Lev for picking Colorado to be
straight up, right?
But I'm giving actually, you know what, Lev? I'm going to give you and Mel Tucker a shout out for the same thing.
Okay.
Mel Tucker wore shorts on the sideline. How many coaches in football wear shorts?
Pat Fitzgerald has done that
really
several times for Northwestern.
Okay,
trendsetter.
And I'm giving you a shout out because season opener, I remember this. You wore shorts to the game, and I remember thinking I was wearing jeans. I'm like, I have to wear pants, but Michael Lev gets to wear shorts. I guess I got to earn my stripes around here.
I wore shorts for Hawaii and for NAU. But once, you know, when you face a Power 5 opponent like Texas Tech,
then you got to put on
the
pants.
I went to the pants and the dress shirt.
But big shout out, I love shorts. I hate wearing pants. So and Mel Tucker setting the trend for wearing shorts at football games.
Obviously, I picked Colorado to win that game, so I'm not surprised. The surprising element of that game to me is that Laviska Shenault got injured early in the game, couldn't play, and they won anyway. I don't know where Tony Brown kind of came out of nowhere, become a big, you know, big play receiver for them. And Steven Montez, we've talked about this.
Like Manny Wilkins, that's your comparison?
Yeah, no. All the physical traits that you want, and there are some throws he makes where you're like, man, that's an NFL throw. Speaking of NFL throws, Jacob Eason for Washington, Man, that guy makes a lot of NFL throws. That was – we'll talk about Cal in a minute because there's a lot of things to talk about in that game. But that was the most impressive overall performance to me by a Pac-12 team over the weekend. Washington just manhandled a big, strong, physical BYU team that's given a lot of people trouble, that beat USC the previous week, that won at Tennessee. Jacob Eason looks like a future number one pick in the draft. Mm. I mean, he is slinging the ball all over the yard. One of those guys I feel like who could, like, I'll bring a name from the past, Carson Palmer. You remember sort of the latter days of Carson Palmer with the Cardinals, mm-hmm. but back in the day with USC, he was one of those guys who could make every single throw. He could throw from the left hash to the right sideline and vice versa. That's what I see in Jacob Eason. Strong arm, pretty good mobility. Washington is a dangerous team if they've got a quarterback.
When Washington, too, you say manhandled BYU, even when things were starting to kind of slip through their fingers at the end of the first half, because they attempted to do a fake field goal.
Didn't work.
I had no idea why. BYU goes down, and I believe they scored. So BYU had some momentum at halftime. It was only a 12-point game, I believe. And I was thinking to myself, okay, here we go. BYU is going to somehow, you know, claw their way back into this game because they're down by 12. They get the ball at halftime. And this is going to be another situation like USC from the previous week. Washington said, nuh-uh.
Nope.
We're going to come out and we're going to play big boy football better than you guys do. And that's exactly what they did. Jacob Eason made all the right throws. He made all the right reads. And Washington's defensive front, I mean, they were getting to the quarterback, and I was just completely blown away by Washington. And they looked like a team that could be in the college football playoff. It's just how much is the committee going to look at – let's just say Washington does go the rest of the season without a loss. And they had that one loss against Cal. How much is the committee going to hold a grudge against the Huskies for that loss?
It's a home loss.
Especially the way it all depends on how Cal finishes the season, of course.
It depends, A, on how Cal finishes the season, and B, what happens in the other leagues. Are we comparing Washington to a one loss? Like, what if it's LSU and their only loss is against Alabama? You know they're going to put LSU in over Washington. So there's a lot of factors and a lot of football to be played. But super impressive performance. Washington comes here on October 12th for family weekend. No Cal on the schedule this year, Justin, which might be a good thing.
I think Arizona fans are wiping sweat off their forehead.
Super impressive. I want to talk about the end of the game. So I'm going back and forth with people on Twitter this morning about whether there should have been a replay. The guy for Ole Miss catches the ball right on the goal line. They don't have any timeouts. The clock's running. They rule him down at like the half-yard line. Ole Miss has to run a play. They've got no choice. They've got no way to stop the game. They can't challenge. They don't have any timeouts. They obviously don't get in. The Pac-12 comes out Sunday night and says, we feel like the original call was correct, but we also feel like there probably should have been a replay of that play. In which case, you know, Ole Miss would have had time to run a normal play rather than like a haphazard, you know, quarterback sneak, which is what they tried to do.
So was the Pac-12 saying, I'm not saying we messed up, but we messed up.
Yeah, for the segment. I feel like, and I'm going to ask, see what you think about this. I feel like regardless of whether the call was right at the end of the day, it had to be replayed because that's how college football is. Every play is subject to replay. It's super important. Even if the unintended consequence of that is that Ole Miss kind of gets a free timeout out of it, it doesn't matter. The right thing to do is to replay the play that is deciding the game.
And I wonder, did any of the coaches go up to the refs and say, maybe you guys should take a second look at this?
I mean, I'm sure they were trying to, but it was so chaotic. It was literally like under 10 seconds left in the game. And as I said on Twitter, too, I feel like it was so close that if they had made the original call of a touchdown, that would have been upheld as well, you know?
Yeah.
Which there was just no angle. You know, you're in a morning, you know, in a morning game on ESPNU, you're not going to get – you don't have the pylon cam. You don't have as many angles as you're going to have for – you know, the primetime game or what have you. So you couldn't tell. But anyway, the upshot
They should have reviewed it.
100%. 100%. And it doesn't matter if the call was right afterward or if Ole Miss benefits from it. The right thing to do is to review the play, because that's how college football is set up.
Especially the biggest point of the game.
Right.
Because you review everything else. You're throwing flags at everything else. Yeah. You're slowing down the game before that moment. What's one more look at it?
Someone made a good point on Twitter today that if that play had happened at any earlier point in the game, they would have stopped the clock and looked at it.
Just ridiculous.
Anyway, the upshot, though, of course, the upshot is that Cal wins against an SEC team on the road, which is not something that any of us thought was going to happen. And lo and behold, the last unbeaten team in the Pac-12, Cal Golden Bears under Justin Wilcox, who, I mean, it's defense, it's the running game, it's, you know, avoiding turnovers. It's kind of old school football, but it's a brand of football that travels well.
And I think Justin Wilcox sent a message to the rest of college football. Not that Cal is here and we're going to be good, that, hey, if I could do this with Cal, imagine what I could do for your program at any big time school. You know what I mean? I mean, wasn't this kind of almost like a tryout for Justin Wilcox? I think so.
So they are at home against Arizona State on Friday. We will preview the Pac-12 slate on our Thursday podcast. But interesting game.
Lots of interesting games coming up.
Really interesting game.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. You can get it on the App Store and Google Play.
Day game at Boulder.
1:30 here in Tucson.
1:30 Tucson time, folks.
Lev is excited.
I'm so happy.
We'll hear from you next time.